Good evening, brothers. Welcome to the Master Builder Call for Masons Lead Better. I'm Mike Clevenger, and welcome you and the brothers here that are live on the call tonight. We appreciate the time you have taken to be a part of what we're doing tonight. I'm really excited tonight because we have with us again our good friend and brother Mike Kirkab, who is the author of Working Tools of Leadership, which is all about applying the tools and teachings of masonry. And Mike has been on before, and we're going to tackle another chapter in his book for our education tonight. Michael, how are you doing this evening?
I am doing better than I deserve, and I think we is appropriate.
Well, this is, as I like to use the term, this is in the Masons Lead Better workshops, is it's a dialogue. It's a it's a coming together of like-minded men, and we do that tonight, like-minded men who believe in the same things, same values, same morals, but we all think a little bit differently, and with a dialogue, as you all the brothers know, that someone contributes another perspective, and that's the beauty of our fraternity, is that we can all gather as brothers and offer our perspective to each other. Want to also welcome to those listening later. It's been encouraging here. We have been averaging a month downloading and listening to the lessons. So that means even though they can't be here live on the call while like we are tonight, the interest there is really good, and I'm encouraged by that. So I thank those brothers who are listening later, and thanks for your interest in improving yourself and certainly masonry. Well, tonight we will specifically be engaging in a dialogue about the trowel. As we know, the ritual tells us that it's used to spread the cement of brotherly love and affection. But I ask the question, what does that mean to each of us personally? And what does it direct us to do when we're in a leadership position? So through our dialogue, we hope to uncover some answers this evening and share some thoughts. Michael, I think you'll find this interesting, and then I'm gonna tell you my preparation, and then I'm gonna turn it over to you. But as I was preparing for this evening's call, I pulled out the worksheet that we use in the Masons Lead Better workshop to study. We use this worksheet to study all of the tools and lessons, but I pulled out the one specifically I had done for myself about the trowel. And then after I reviewed what I had written, I don't know how many months ago, I went to your book and reviewed the chapter again and about the trowel and my notes that I have in your book. And it was very interesting just how similar as it related to your thoughts and my thoughts about leadership. Totally. It was like we had Masonic ESP or something, you know. So I don't know. So I'm real hepped up here about hearing more from you. So why don't you get us started tonight and share your thoughts about the trowel? And before you start, brothers, if you've got a question, just jump right in there and I'll do the same so that we can just actively engage in this whole thing. So, Mike, the floor is yours.
Masonic ESP, huh?
Yeah, that's what it is, Masonic ESP.
Masonic ESP between those who best can work and best agree. How's that?
Sounds like a start of a poem to me.
So, yeah, when I started, you know, really thinking about how the trowel applies to leadership and the whole concept of spreading cement, right? I started thinking about just the idea of spreading it, right? Sharing this common bond across bricks, right? And where what the commonality of spreading the cement of brotherly love, okay, that I took it one step further and said, okay, well, what does that mean? And then I started looking at my interactions from time when I was in high school all the way through today, right? Mm-hmm. And what really was kind of uncomfortable when I was contemplating it was the fact that up until I started trying to improve myself, was I wasn't spreading cement of brotherly love. I was spreading cement of sarcasm.
Oh, right? Okay.
And maybe things that may have been mean-spirited, even though I thought just because of my experience through adolescence up through college and into adulthood was this, you know, how do you be cool? How do you roll, you know, run with the pack when you're in school? And it becomes this defense mechanism of, hey, who can come up with the snappiest put down, right? And if you can't, you're not cool, right?
You're so not cool. I understand that, yeah.
So it's almost like the trials and tribulations of adolescence, we're taught not to spread the cement of brotherly love as a defense mechanism these days. And so I started thinking about that and how once I got into the industry that I was, which was entertainment, the stagehand industry was very much the same.
Oh, was it?
Oh, absolutely. Don't get me wrong. There's a camaraderie there, and it's a wonderful, wonderful group of people, and I love being a stagehand. I will always be a stagehand. I love it. But it's not about, you know, there is a lot of that disrespectful language being used, a lot of the that put down mentality that exists. And it wasn't until I was in charge of a stage that I learned that doesn't work when you're actually trying to lead a crew of stagehands. It may work when you're a group of stagehands messing around with each other backstage, pushing boxes up onto a stage. It doesn't work when you're trying to get a group of stagehands to get the job done.
I hear you.
Right? And so as I was reflecting on it, it's like, okay, well, what then is the cement that we need to be spreading? And that's where I kind of came up with this brief ingredient list, and there's more ingredients realistically, but it's really helping instill confidence in the members of your team. It's being able to listen and then provide proper guidance when you know, being approached with a problem or a challenge that your team members have. It could be as simple as giving compliments, positive feedback when necessary, and just your overall disposition, right? Smiling when you're greeting your team members.
Your attitude. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, that goes farther than anything else, right? The second somebody walks into a job or walks into lodge or even wakes up in the morning in your family, if they're greeted with a smile, hey, you know what? This is going to be a great day. But if the very first thing that they're hit with is some sort of negative energy, there goes the day, right? Now it's an uphill battle the entire day. So those are really the starting points of my take on the trial, when looking at writing about it.
So the trial becomes a base tool for supporting a team concept.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, we're spreading it, right? We're spreading it from team member to team member. We are taking our disposition. We're taking our positive feedback. We're taking that building confidence in our teams and spreading it to every individual on that team, every individual brick or ashlar that is being connected by that cement of brotherly love.
Okay. So the materials began with understanding, and I'll throw in my perspective at that point, is that as a leader, thinking about the trowel and spreading brotherly love, that you think of that trowel and that brotherly love, that overrides any title you may have that designates you as a leader.
Absolutely.
That you mentioned attitude, that, or in your book you call it disposition, that that's an ingredient, a material that you use to spread the cement of brotherly love in building your team.
And I mean, that's part of it, right? Because then it looks at when we talk about the trowel, there's the mention of, right, kind of what I alluded to in the intro, who best can work and best agree.
Right.
And I think where, for in terms of leadership, what that speaks to is, and I'm trying to remember the author. He's an author that I've read. It might be Pat Lencioni. It might be Maxwell. Speaks about strengths-based leadership, right? Working in your strengths. We all have these areas where we're really strong, and we have areas where we're really weak. And with the team, as a leader, you can identify who is strong where, right? And it's great to help people build upon their weaknesses so they can improve. But at the end of the day, when you're trying to achieve a goal, you know that you want everybody to be the strongest they can possibly be, right? So getting everybody aligned to work within their strengths towards that common goal just means you're going to be that much more successful at achieving that goal.
Yeah, and that I think it was it was Maxwell that talks about that, understanding your strengths as a leader and your weaknesses allows you to put together a very powerful team, because you recognize the areas you're weak in, and by building a relationship with others, in other words, spreading the cement of brotherly love by caring about them, then you figure out what they're good at, and you help support them and make them better in the things they're good at, and ask them to support you in an area you're weak in. And that's, go ahead.
What's interesting about that is, which means by definition, one's leadership style has to be engaging, right? That person in that position has to be engaging every member of the team to understand where those strengths lie.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that goes back to the brotherly love aspect of the trowel, and going, you know what, we need to really understand who these people on our team are as individuals, right?
Oh, yeah.
And how we can help them
go ahead.
Just to, you know, to again, help them achieve their goals, because they're there for a reason, right? They're not there from an altruistic, you know, reason. They're there to make money if it's at a job. In masonry, they're there to improve themselves first, right? Because we can't improve anything else until we improve ourselves. So, and in our families, same thing, right? So how do we help them get what they need in order for them to help us get what we need to do? It's a two-way street.
Right, and one of the things I wrote down when I was thinking of the trowel, as I went through the Mason's Lead Better exercise worksheet, was that the trowel asks us to build relationships, and that's what we're talking about. How do you understand what a guy, what your brother Mason, what his leadership strengths are and his weaknesses, unless you engage him in a brotherly manner and learn about him.
Mm-hmm.
So the trowel encourages us to build these relationships. I've often said that Masonry, the organization of Masonry and Freemasonry and running Masonry, is a relationship organization. Or we wouldn't have the trowel, would we?
Well, it's definitely a relationship organization. After all, it is a fraternity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about listening. How tell us about how listening plays into the trial.
Well, so to me, listening is just an ingredient of that cement that we're spreading with the trial, right? When we are engaging our teams and we want our teams to be successful, our teams are going to look to us for guidance, which means they're going to ask us questions about things they don't know, we hope, right? Or they're going to come to us with a challenge as to why they can't do something.
Right.
So it's important to be able to listen to what those concerns are before we even attempt to give any guidance. Because what they may be saying may really be them asking for help in their own personal life, how they can achieve something, right? There was, I'll go back to the stagehand example. When I was at a venue here in Las Vegas, there was a stagehand who came to me who, you know, had a lot of trouble getting some of the work, the prep work done for a show. And so at the end of the day, he came to me and said, you know, I'm really having trouble with this, and I really can't understand how to do it. And I after listening to him, and he and I talked for quite a while, I realized that what he was actually lacking in confidence was, it was confidence that he was lacking because he didn't really see the success of the show. He didn't get to stick around as a stagehand to see what his efforts actually helped produce. He came in, and because of his role in the show, he actually had to leave before the show started. So we kept him on stage for the show, and he got to see why it's important to run cables a certain way, to place things a certain way on the stage. And afterwards, it was this big understanding of, wow, that's it. And now, you know, he became one of the best stagehands of the crew. After
was that
I saw
right?
that. You know, but it was really understanding why he was having such a challenge, because by listening to what he was describing as to what he didn't understand, he was describing basic skills, but in reality, he didn't understand the end goal. He had difficulty seeing that. Right, so it was also a big lesson to me in how to describe the vision and sell the vision to the team.
Right, and then you actually let him see the result of his work.
Right.
One of the things that always comes to mind about listening is you've heard of Tom Peters, the leadership author, Tom Peters. And he I think he became in prominence when he wrote In Search of Excellence. Anyway, you can go
write
on.
That down. I haven't read that one.
In Search of Excellence. Matter of fact, go to YouTube and type in Tom Peters, and you can watch a number of his short lessons, and one is on listening. And I always remember this. Matter of fact, I've used it in several presentations. There was a study done that he refers to, and I think it may have been the UK they did this. I can't remember exactly. It could have been the States. And they interviewed doctors. And these were doctors who saw patients in their offices. And they wanted to know, how long did it take before, after a patient came in and started describing what was wrong with them, how long did it take the doctor to interrupt that patient and give a response and a diagnosis? Now, it was, and you got to watch the video, but the amazing thing was, it was 20 seconds. 20 seconds, these doctors, on the average, listened to their patients and then interrupted them and jumped in and gave them a diagnosis. And Tom's point was, for a leader, if you're going to be that 20-second guy, that's not going to work for you, because you have not gathered enough information in 20 seconds to understand what you just described from the stagehand's viewpoint.
I got to say.
What?
That describes perfectly something I caught myself doing recently with my daughter.
Is that right?
So my daughter is, my older daughter is 6. And recently, I caught myself doing it, and I've since stopped, but it described perfectly what it was. She would ask me a question because she wanted to know about something. And I could tell what she wanted. I could tell what the question was before she finished it, and I caught myself answering the question before she was finished. And I realized that as a father, that's actually a really bad lesson to be teaching my child, because I'm teaching my child to interrupt others and not listen to others. And I'm not giving her my full attention by not letting her finish, right?
There you
not
go.
Letting her form her own communication. So, I mean, it...
it just hit home, didn't it?
It sure did.
Well, you know, and Tom goes on to say, he said... and he's a great presenter anyway, because he's got this, he's a kind of a comedic guy. But anyway, he goes on to say that if he had his own MBA school, there would be 2 courses that he would require everybody to take. The first semester would be listening 101, and the second semester would be listening 102. And he contends that an organization would be much stronger if everybody stopped talking as much and listened to each other and understood what was being communicated to them. So let's roll this back to a lodge, and all from the trowel. Think about, are we listening? I'll ask a question. Are we listening? We always complain we don't have enough brothers coming to lodge. Have we actually engaged them and listened to them about why they are coming to lodge and what would make their lodge experience better? All from Tom Peters and all from the Masonic Trowel. And that's what it's teaching us, among other things, right, Michael?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the other thing is, I was just looking at what I had written down as it related to leadership, was that the trowel reminded me, as a leader, that I need to, and I think you said this earlier, that I need to encourage my brothers, encourage them to improve themselves. Certainly your story, the sagehand, you encouraged him to understand the whole process and therefore he felt better about what he was doing, or understood why, if he screwed up, what effect it would have. So I always, when I wrote down my notes about how would I use the trowel in my everyday life and my leadership life, would be to always try to encourage those I'm attempting to lead.
That is actually, I think, probably one of the most important aspects of the trowel, especially when talking about leadership. One of the things I talked about in the book, that it's probably one of the big things that I feel most, I don't know, it's probably my passage that I like the most in the book, is where I talk about there's no way around it. We're surrounded by people. People have wants, needs, goals, and dreams, right?
Right.
On an individual level, each person's needs and wants may greatly differ from any other person. There may be similarities. There may be similarities. But at the end of the day, one person's motivation for being at work or at lodge or doing something with their family is completely different from another person's motivation for doing those same things. So as leaders, we have to be able to recognize those motivations and encourage the people to continue with that motivation to achieve those goals, dreams.
And also, right, if you understand a lodge brother has a want or a need or a dream or a goal about what masonry is going to provide him, and as a lodge, you recognize you're not providing that, it's kind of an eye-opening experience, wouldn't it be?
Yes, it is.
Along
the same lines, it's similar. I think Zig Ziglar probably said it best, right? You can have anything you want as long as you help enough people get what they want.
Isn't that cool?
But there's truth to it.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, as an aside, the brothers listening here, you want to hear some good stuff. You can go to YouTube and listen to Zig Ziglar. I mean, the man is amazing. He's just amazing. Anything else from the book that kind of jumps to mind that you want to highlight, Michael?
I mean, really, as far as the trowel goes, I think we really touched on it. You know, we talked about working in the strengths and working with our teams and where they're strong. I think the one caveat would be, you know, what about weaknesses? Is that, you know, do we ignore them? No, we don't. We definitely want to help people improve where they're weak, but I think we don't want to spend too much time at it, right? If we do want to work as a team to succeed, we want to make sure that every member of the team is working in those areas where they are strong, right?
Sure. And it's Dr. Maxwell who says that a leader, although he needs to recognize his weaknesses, doesn't necessarily need, if their leadership weaknesses, first of all, if their value weaknesses, that's something that really needs to be worked on.
Mm-hmm.
And theoretically, we don't have brother Masons who should have moral or value issues. I say that theoretically because we have bad eggs pop up, right? However, Dr. Maxwell says that, and I've just lost my train of thought where I was going with this. What were we talking about? You just mentioned
strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, strengths and weaknesses. That a leader needs to reveal his weaknesses to his team,
mm-hmm.
so that they can understand and support him where he needs to be weak. Where he is weak, and not really worry about, you know, trying to improve something that maybe you're not, and I think you mentioned this in the book, Mike, that you're not naturally inclined to do. So that you lead, always lead from your areas of strength. So if we back off to the trowel again and say, okay, all of this trowel, this tool, is reminding us of all of these things as a leader and as a person to build relationships, lead using the value, the rest of the values in the organization, become an active listener. And the trowel reminds us that we're a team, even though we elect an officer to lead us, a master of our lodge. That master, his disposition, the term Michael uses in the book, should always be that of, I'm on the level with you. I like to say, if you get a title in the Masonic fraternity, it just means you raised your hand and says, brothers, I love you. And I'm going to step up to the plate and take care of that for us, not for me, for us. One last thing, I think we...
Or you were voluntold.
Voluntold, yeah. I heard that the other day, and I don't know where that was. Voluntold, yeah. I want to get your take on here before I... Oh, by the way, brothers, we were getting background noise, so I muted everybody. So just in a minute, I'll just turn off the... cues. So if you want to speak, just hit star 6 on your phone. But I'll wait in a minute. One of the things, Michael, I want you to comment on, and I always think about this. We've been talking specifically about leadership, but let's talk about the concept of brotherly love universally. Okay, mm-hmm. As a person, and I always like to ask the brothers in the workshop, what does this mean? How do you practice brotherly love every day? What are the simple things you can do that shows brotherly love? Some of those things, I think one of the things you just mentioned, smile. Mm-hmm. Not just to your brothers, but everyone you meet. We talk about walking down the street and you're approaching a stranger. Do you duck your head, not say anything, or do you look them in the eye and say, good morning, how are you?
Well, I think the concept of brotherly love and the idea of it is something that is even more important now. You look at what's going on in the world. We're coming up on another presidential election. Debates happen, right? Mm-hmm. It's natural. It has to happen. It's healthy. It has to happen. But just because the debate has to happen, the conversation has to happen, doesn't mean it has to be mean-spirited. It doesn't have to be done in a way that removes all aspects of brotherly love, right?
No.
I think it's a really important lesson and concept to keep in mind in the coming year, because it's going to be really important. I'd like to think that you know, peace, harmony, and brotherly love prevail all the time, but if you were to only get your source of information from the news, it almost appears that these days there's more division happening. And so I think it's really important for us, especially as Freemasons, to continue to make sure that in our discourse, with our friends and our families, especially when it comes to current events, foreign relations, domestic politics, economics, that we're cognizant of that. And that when we're having the discussion, if we're trying to sway somebody, we're not doing it in an insulting manner, but in an educational manner.
Very well
regardless
said.
Of which way we're going.
Very well said, man. Michael Kirkcab for President of the United States.
Oh, no.
We're going to launch it.
I will never leave
well
the private sector.
That's well said, my brother. I mean that's the essence of presenting yourself as a Mason. And this spreading, this trial business extends to those situations. And that's the point, that regardless of the regardless of the your personal opinion about what that let's stay in the politics realm, what that political candidate is saying, I like the term education. You speak from an educated standpoint. If you have something of substance to add, doing it in a respectful, educating manner. One thing I just can't stand anymore is this is the part I won't like as the presidential election heats up, is all of the negative stuff that is brought out. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's not about here's my idea about how to resolve this problem. It's here's my idea about how to resolve this problem, and oh, by the way, my opponent screwed it all up for us.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not us, as you just pointed out. That's not how Masons react.
No, I think it's actually a really good opportunity for Masons, right, to in our conversations with others to demonstrate that ability. And apply these working tools in our conversations over the next year to help keep our nation's conversations grounded, right? To kind of help keep that level head. It's important. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want to devalue the importance of having these conversations about the direction of our country, because it is important. Mm-hmm. And everyone's going to have a different opinion. It's just recently, because the tweet, the 140 characters, making a point in 140 characters, has become so popular, it's difficult to, you know, it's kind of like the soundbite, I guess, of the 90s. It's difficult to really be respectful and to really be accurate in our positions that we take.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so what we're saying here then is that in a leadership position, well, let me start again. We as Masons need to take a leadership position using the trowel and the lessons the trowel teaches us about leadership, about relationships, about brotherly love. We need to extend that beyond the Masonic fraternity. And that's what will make us a respected, more respected fraternity by our individual actions.
So I definitely want to hear from the brethren on the
sure.
call.
Yeah.
About a lot of what we talked about. I do want to mention, you and I have talked about this, Mike, and I'll let you decide how far you want to go with it. But as you and I have talked, I'm actually releasing a second edition of the book that has some guided questions. And just in the trial, one of the questions that I ask in this new section of the book, the question is, in what ways can we work together to develop Freemasonry strength to keep its light shining for all to see? Right, it's taking that idea of developing strengths, not just in the members of our team, but within our fraternity as a whole. Well, how can we work together to make sure that we are a shining example for all to see? It's an open-ended question. It's a journal question in the new edition of the book, but I think it's appropriate to talk about that question here.
Yeah, and I think that's a great question to open it up for discussion. And what I'm going to do here, I'm going to turn on the little thing I got in the console here, Q&A, and that allows you to hit star 6, and let's weigh in on that question. And your thoughts on the question Mike just asked, and or anything else related to the trial. Mike, why don't you repeat the question again here while we're waiting?
Sure. In what ways can we work together to develop Freemasonry's strengths to keep its light shining for all to see?
Okay. That's the question. We just talked about the trial and spreading the cement of brotherly love and sharing the common bond of our values. How do we extend that and keep that going in the world? Hit star 6 and you're the first guy up. I know. I'm looking at these names. I know there's some guys with some things to say out here. I see a guy I'm going to call on if he does it. Come on, guys.
Don't leave
us hanging. Hey, we're recording this, you know, and later on these guys are going to download and said, hey, what's going on there? While I'm waiting on that, don't be bashful, guys, star 6. I was going to do this at the end, but we got bashful guys on the call here tonight. We got a brother just jumped right in there. Brother Benjamin, how are you? You're on. Go ahead.
That was the mute button. I apologize for that. Good evening,
okay.
Brother Mike and Brother Mike. How are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you, man?
Great.
Excellent.
How are you?
Excellent. Once again, I would like to say this is a marvelous topic here. And what Brother Mike's question addressed, what we can do to work together in order to be that shining example. It just instantly brought to mind what we've been talking about in relation to, I don't have a quote per se, but I know it had to do with the word illness. I-L-L-N-E-S, the word I, if you replace that letter and put we in the front of that, you now have the word wellness.
Right.
Two different aspects, illness and wellness, I and we concept. That, to me, seems to be one of the crucial parts as far as spreading that cement of brotherly love. If you do it by yourself, you can get far quickly, but if you do it with others, you can get further ahead. And that's one of the things that I see as far as spreading that cement of brotherly love is working together. In relation to another thing that Brother Mike was stating as far as being that example, I know that just hit me with one of the charges. In particular, the Masturbation Charge, on what our just title is. And that just title is not about the position or role that individuals have, but it's the work that we do that defines and moves people. If we work through that example, we'll be more effective. Now, I sound a little bit disjointed because there's just so many things that this topic touches, in particular about that ingredient of love. When I see the word love, I'm looking at it as every single time I walk into a lodge, I don't care if it's my home lodge, Reynoldsburg, or another lodge for that matter, when I walk into a lodge and I see the brothers, automatically I have this butterfly effect that's taking place, like almost, it's been such a long time that I've been on a date, but that giddy feeling when I see my brothers, it's an energy, it's a passion inside that I have
that's
toward
cool.
my fellow brothers. And through that translation of that love, I have such a heightened respect for every single one of those men within the lodge, an admiration towards every single one of those brothers. And because I have that towards them, it's almost that mirror effect. I don't know if they could say, ah, who's this guy right here? But because I have it towards them, I can see that reflection back towards me, that same respect towards me. Because we often talk about that beehive. One bee can't fill that, do all the work for the entire beehive, but it takes an entire colony of bees to get anything done effectively. So if you have that respect and that admiration, up through it comes that compassion and kindness for one another. And that is the ingredients for my perspective, spreading that cement, spreading that material with the trowel that we have. That's what I'd like to add towards such a great topic with the basis. And it really shouldn't be a secret. Love. Shouldn't be a secret at all, what masonry is all about. And that's the ingredient that's going to make us be that shining example within the community itself.
Very cool, man.
That's awesome. Before the call, Mike and I were talking about Las Vegas and how we go dark in July and August. And every September, we go back to Lodge, and you get that same feeling, right? Wow, you know what? Some of these guys I haven't seen in 2 months. It is so great to see these people again. And taking, that excitement and that feeling and just applying it into our daily lives, that's awesome. I think you're spot on. That's a great way to explain it.
It reminded me too when you were describing love at the lodge, and I actually pulled it out, got it in front of me now. I ran into an address by a past grandmaster who was the Grand Master of Alberta, the province in Canada. And he was describing brotherly love, and he said this: "I will place on my Masonic brother the highest possible valuation as a friend and companion, to be with him, to spend hours in his company, to have the privilege of working at his side is all I ask." And that's exactly, Ben, what you're talking about. Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, that was great.
Anything else? We'll let you go on if you want to. You put yourself back on mute, didn't you?
I did hit that mute button once again. but as I was hitting that mute button, that was, again, consideration. And that's another key leadership quality, having that consideration, not just for yourself but for everybody around you. And we were alluded towards the political process, and everyone who's seen the political process knows that it can be decisive. It can also, have plenty of mean-spirited qualities towards it and disrespectful language. But when I think about that, it's easy to go in that direction for an individual, whether you're in politics or, and this is Mike alluded to earlier about a defense mechanism towards the world. It's easy to have, negative energy, and it takes a lot of work in order to, live in that positive. And that's what really differentiates, us as Masons. And there's plenty of good people out there, but we constantly have to work. Work is not easy, but we constantly have to work to live in that positive. I look at from our societal standpoint. I don't know, this has been taking place for the past 7 to 10 years, where I see the fad now, people taking pictures together. Again, these aren't Masons, but I see people taking pictures together, and it's real easy for them to put up their middle finger. What does that say about that individual? What does it say about their moral compass to have that middle finger pointed up in the picture? we're losing our moral compass in that regards there. So that goes back to what can we do as Masons in order to be able to keep that light shining. And it boils back down to moral values. Be kind to one another. Not partake in those types of activities that degrade our character or, in that respect, takes the easy path of being mean-spirited, divisive, and disrespectful within our language. We have to be living examples. And through that example, that's where leadership, where people gravitate towards us. I know I've alluded to it on previous calls. Be that example. Live your life through merit, and that will be have the entire world say, that's what I would like to live. That's the values that I would like to do, because that person is not doing for himself, but he's doing, again, taking that I out of illness and doing the we, creating wellness.
Wow, man.
Well said. Well said.
Oh, my goodness. I wrote down, we have to work to live in the positive. I just love that. I just absolutely love that. Oh, man. Well, you know what? Brother Ben, we might have to have you come on next month and just be the program. How's that?
I'm going to defer back to Brother Mike. We are the program.
Well, oh, man. I love you, man. That's cool. That is way cool. Well, thanks for your input. I mean, just really pearls of wisdom there. I like it. Anybody else here got any thoughts? We've got a few minutes left. I've got a couple of announcements. Other than that, it's open. If not, well, let me jump into these announcements. And while I am, think about if there's anything else you want to say. And Michael, certainly anything else you want to end with. But I just want to point out some things to watch for here in Ohio that began, and the first one begins next week. Our deputy Grand Master Rob Rill begins his what we call here in Ohio, Ohio brothers know this, the rollouts. And Right Wishful Brother Rill will be around. There are 8 locations in Ohio that he'll be out meeting with the brothers and giving them a hint and a view about his take on what the Masonic year will look like when he's elected Grand Master. This is a transition process that's going on, and I think it's really, really great because we're finishing a Masonic year. Most Wishful Brother Kochenauer is still working his programming, and we're working his programming, but the Grand Lodge officers recognize that there is a process that needs to transition. And so Right Wishful Brother Rill will be out in the, as I said, 8 locations. If you want to see where those locations are, go to the homepage of the Village of Ohio, which is freemason.com, and the schedule is there. And I encourage you to, when one of those sessions come near you, to go there and listen to Right Worshipful Brother Rill. The second thing I want to bring up is that the Masons Lead Better schedule for Ohio for the next Masonic year. We're working on that right now, working on a second workshop, which is a second level, and possibly, well, not possibly, there will be a video option to that. In other words, if you can't get to a live session, there will be a video option. Not as interactive, of course, but can get the material through the website. And as these details and are finalized and we know exactly how this and when this is going to happen, you'll certainly be the first to know. So a couple of things one other thing I've been asked to, and I'm in the process of doing that, is putting on the Masons Lead Better website a personal development type study guide so that you can take your workbook from the workshop, and this is some additional coaching, if you will, that will help you progress through that material. Again, I'll mention the Master Builder groups that are going on in a number of the districts. If you've not heard about one in your district, please contact your district advisor or one of your district deputies so you can get hooked up to see if there is one. If there isn't one and you'd like to see one happen, please email me at mike@mikemasonsleadbetter.com and we'll help you out. So anyway, those are the three things I wanted to bring out before we close. Michael, first of all, thank you very, very much for being with us again tonight. Your insight from your book brought some great thoughts to all of us. So you're welcome anytime.
Well, I thank you for having me. I always enjoy being on these calls, either, you know, in this capacity or just listening in when I get a chance. Luckily, I wasn't traveling all that much this month, so I was able to join. So thank you very much for your support and having me on. I really do appreciate it.
Well, it's been our pleasure, and certainly you're welcome. You're welcome anytime. And we'll look forward to... you alluded to a second edition of your book, and I like, we chatted about that a week or so ago, and I really like the idea that you've put these questions at the end of these chapters. I think it's really, really great, and look forward.
You want to mention any more about it?
Huh?
You want to mention any more about it? Wink, wink.
What he's alluding to, he's asked me to write the foreword for his second edition of this book, and I told him I'm really excited about this because I've never done that before for an author, but this it's just going to be a privilege to do that because the material and the thinking. The psych ESP we have between us is really, really great about leadership and using the tools and lessons. So I've been thinking, just so you know, Michael, I've been thinking about what I'm going to say in there, and I'm gonna put pencil to paper here within the next week, so you'll have that. But thank you. Thank you for that honor. I consider it an honor. So,
like I said before, it's all on this side. Thank you. I'm really, really happy that you're going to be doing that. So,
thank you. My pleasure. My pleasure. Well, brothers, it's been a pleasure here being with you tonight. You don't know how much I'll say personally. This charges me up as well, and I just. I hope you continue your journey of studying masonry, making it personal for you. Think about what these tools and lessons mean to you. How, as Michael just proposed to us tonight, the question: how do we take what we our learning and practicing in our lodges. How do we take that to the world? And as Brother Benjamin told us, it's work. We have to work to live in the positive. But some of the areas we pointed out tonight, we can be that force. We can be that force for good. And I encourage you to do that. So until next month, I'm going to unmute it. Let me get I forgot to turn this whole thing on. I'm going to unmute us. Good night, brother, and say good night to your brothers to the next man.
Good night.
Good night, brother.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for being here.
Good night, brothers.